You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. What you're going to hear next is an interview I did on August 13th or 12th of 2016. And if you look on the website, if you look on the read board, you're going to see something called Kerry Costantini's Important Links or something like that. That she said, "Hey, Mac, I've collected these things if you want them." And I said, "Sure." And so so I'd been looking around for somebody to tell the story of wives that were part of the Key Wife Network and the terrible job they had to do. But what a great job they did. And then ultimately, I think... that did not come without a cost, and I think the Marine Corps, in its wisdom, knew that you were really asking a lot of family members and unpaid family members to do something that I can tell you this, that most of us who were forward find very, very difficult. And yet they rolled up their sleeves and they did it. So I asked Kerry to come on after I couldn't find anybody else. And I think she said no the first time. And then I bugged her again and she said, maybe, okay, I'll do it. So the interview you're going to hear is us talking about that. It's about an hour and 20 minutes. The other thing is that, I interviewed a number of people that I was going to play those interviews today as well, but I've decided not to. And only because I think it's better that you just hear her. I think it's just better that you hear her. So with that said, without further ado, from 2.5 years ago, in August of 2016, Kerry Costantini talking about being a Marine wife, being a Marine mother, because she both those things, and talking about her life and her experiences in the last 17 years as the nation went to war. So don't touch that dial on a day that she is laid to rest. If you've never met her before, I saw somebody describe her as she is a natural phenomenon, Kerry Costantini.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We are going to talk about it. 7:36, that would mean it's 10:36 on the East Coast. Joining me from the East Coast is Kerry Costantini. Kerry, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you.
All right. First of all, we first met when you and your husband were sent to the basic school in 1989 or 1990?
1989.
And that was a few years ago. And... So we need to find out about you. You were born and raised where?
I was born in Abilene, Texas.
Whoa.
But I'm an Air Force brat, so we moved around all the time. I'm not from anywhere, really.
You're not from anywhere? So what would you, if I forced you, not that I would, but if I did, to say someplace is home, what would you say?
Virginia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What'd your dad do in the Air Force?
My dad was a civil engineer, so we moved, 5 weeks after I was born, we moved to Newfoundland, Canada, and then to New York, and then to Maryland, and Spain, Germany. My dad retired, moved to Turkey for a year, and then came back to Maryland. But, you know, the majority of the time that I've been around, has been spent in Virginia, either when Will was at Quantico or when Will was at the Pentagon or ICAF. 9 years in Virginia.
So you add that to your growing up time. Wow, what a Air Force gets you around a little bit. What was your favorite place growing up? You've been to a few.
My favorite place was probably Spain.
Spain looks cool. Is it humid in Spain?
It's kind of like California.
We love that.
Yeah.
What part of Spain? Where you at?
You know where the Rapid Reaction Force is based? That little base down there in Morón?
No, I don't know where it is. Where is it on the western coast or is it on the Med side? Where is it?
It's actually just south of Sevilla.
Oh.
So it's very much in the southern Spain of flamenco dancers and bullfights.
Flamenco dancers and bullfights. Those are things to join the Marine Corps for. What about do you habla español?
Un poco.
Ooh, very good. Very good. Okay, so you're born and raised all over the planet, and where did you go to college?
I went to Barry Baldwin.
I've never heard of it. Where is it?
It's very near VMI.
Oh, my God. So you're attracted to VMI guys? Are they like a sister school to VMI?
Actually, it used to be Southern STEM. That was sister school. But yeah, my dad and my grandfather were both VMI graduates.
Oh, so you've been attracted to, like, men in uniform your whole life. Is that the deal?
No.
What? What do you mean? Your dad, your grandpa, you're going to school right next to VMI with those pinheads? Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? And then you marry a Naval Academy guy. So.
I know. My grandfather was like, Carrie, really? A Marine? Honestly,
can't we do something civilized here? So, what did you get your degree in?
History,
storytelling? Yeah.
I'm actually not done with my degree. I keep going back and forth with it.
Do you think someday you'll finish?
Oh, who knows? Will can show you a ton of projects I've never finished.
Oh, really?
Hope springs eternal.
We could probably show you a ton of projects he's never finished either in case you need those one day. What about, give me a favorite historical figure, your history person.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Why? He's one of mine, by the way.
I liked his independent spirit. You know, he kind of shot from the hip.
And he had the intellectual background to be a good hip shooter.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, the thing that I find absolutely incredible about him is the stuff that he did over 100 years ago still reverberates to the nation. The labor reform laws, the trust busting that he did, the national park stuff, the environment stuff. I mean, he was so far ahead of his time, it was ridiculous. And he's just an incredible guy to read about as a young, sickly kid, and then he kind of conquers the asthma that he had. And then what, his mother and his wife die on the same day up in...
On the same day.
And so he reacted well. He went to North Dakota for a couple years and abandoned his family and went out and became a cowboy. And then I think he finds his way back to New York and then ultimately to San Juan Hill where he leads the Rough Riders. He's a big dude in North Dakota, the high school where John, my oldest, went to school was the Rough Riders, and named in honor of the North Dakota guys that he rounded up, and guys from all over Montana, South Dakota, and that comprised his unit that went up San Juan Hill. So tough guys, but he's an interesting guy. So all right, interesting. So you now, how do you meet? How do you ultimately meet your husband, William Constantini?
I was dating one of his classmates at the Naval Academy for about a year and a half, and then he graduated, and my boyfriend at the time went down to Pensacola, watched Top Gun a couple of times, decided he was Tom Cruise.
He decided. You didn't.
but his roommates were still in Annapolis, and they said, hey, look, Carrie, we'll keep you entertained over the summer. We're going to have parties. You just have to bring the chicks. Like, okay.
All right.
So one night they say, we're not having a party, we're going to a toga party. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Bring the chicks. All right. We go there, and there is this guy standing in the corner, and he has the shortest toga of anybody there. And my girlfriend had a bet going that he wasn't wearing underwear. I was sent to settle the bet. He caught me, and we were married 6 months later.
Wait a minute. The guy I know as your husband wore the shortest toga?
Oh, yeah. It was very, very short.
You know, I hope he's not listening, because if he is, he's cringing. Like, he can never go out in public again. So,
no,
like,
no. This is his version of it.
And he's a hairy Italian dude, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And everybody was okay with that? Dude, put a sheet on, okay? Do us all a favor. Shave your back. You know, keep America beautiful. Wow.
I have to stay married to this guy.
I know. look, if you're still married to him after this many years, there's dynamite is not getting you two apart. All right. So you meet him, you got married 6 months later. That's pretty irresponsible.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
broken.
So, you get that's awesome, by the way. You get married 6 months later to a Marine, and your family just looks at you and says, really, what are you doing, Carrie? Is this a cry for help? Do we need to intervene? What is going on with you? So, you get married, and you head to Camp Lejeune?
Yes. Oh, yes. He brought me there on a payday Saturday night.
Of course. Come on. That's the only way
you... I cried. What am I doing? What is this?
A cultural abyss, Camp Lejeune. Now, as a history major, do you know where the R comes from in Camp Lejeune?
No.
Really? Now, here's what I've heard. Tell me if you know this to be true or at least speculated upon. Lejeune is the family pronunciation, and that's where it comes from. You ever heard that?
I suspect that's true.
You suspect that's true? Do you have any reason to believe that anyway? Because I'm trying to get to the bottom of this.
You know, you would have to call the Marine Corps Association and they could tell you.
Oh, they come on. What are they going to tell me? Mac, we think that. Wah, 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 wah. Actually, the Marine Corps Association, we're going to have the Gazette on today. And kind of a little partnership we've created, so we're excited about that. So I'm not going to ridicule the Marine Corps Association today because they're probably listening. Hey, sorry about that. Maybe I will call them and get to the truth. Anyway, so you're married, you head to Lejeune, and what I want to talk about is your experience as a key wife and all that. So the key wife thing, that's just something, you know, that through deployments and stuff like that, the way we organized before the Internet, and shared information, and it was, tell me about it. So who ran it, who organized it, I never remember. So, I'd hear about meetings that Susan would go to, but tell me about the key wife, key volunteer. How did that whole thing, as you kind of came into the Marine Corps, what was it?
Well, it wasn't in existence when I married Will.
Okay.
A couple of years later, I would say, Maybe 1988, 1989, the Air Winger Wives started it. I think Bonnie Amos was involved in that, in getting that started. And it seemed to work. Even though we didn't have a KV program, wives really tried to organize themselves, you know, phone treaties, spread the information. So, you know, it wasn't command-sponsored, but wives would organize themselves, and then the Marine Corps formalized the KV program, and you had to go take the training, you had to get a certificate in order to be a KV.
And that's a key, so in order to be a key volunteer. Now, so the precursor was the Officer Wife Club?
No, I don't think that was, I think that the Aviator Wives started organizing it because it just seemed to work, you know, it's, they, in their own way, formalized it themselves. And then the Marine Corps sort of noticed it and said, oh, that's good.
And Bonnie Amos was at the center of that?
I am reasonably certain that she was very much involved in organizing the volunteers.
Interesting. All right, so it starts as that kind of just the social thing, and at that time the most rigorous thing that's going on are deployments.
Right.
And then what changes between then and say 2002, when we began to get ready to go to war in Iraq?
What changes?
Yeah, you then have to go through some kind of training to become a key volunteer?
You absolutely had to go through some kind of training. And actually, it was recommended that you redo your training because things would change. Rules would change. You know, confidentiality was a huge thing. This was not a gossip club.
Okay.
This was sending information. And then, so there are two kinds of problems, as I see them. There are regular deployment problems, like I lost my ID card and I need a new one.
Right.
Or my pay is screwed up. Not getting paid.
Right.
But those are, you know, admin type of problems. And then, you know, the health issues. Those are normal deployment problems.
Right.
And then you have the combat deployment problem, which are, you know, the wounded in action and the killed in action. Those are a different set of problems. So I noticed it in 2004 when I redid my certification. I did it the day Will left to go to Iraq. We started talking about grief. We started discussing more sensitive issues, how to handle it, how to handle stress. That was a big one. How do you handle your stress?
Your own stress?
Right, because there's a tendency to take ownership of other people's problems, and you can't do that.
Right.
You have to help them.
How do you not
blow them off?
How do you not do it? I mean, it's the kind of people that get involved in these organizations and the kind of people that come into Marine Corps. It's the way they are. Yeah, I mean, it's like, how do you not be you? How do you shut that one off at night? So let me formally ask you that.
You don't.
Okay.
You don't shut it off. You absolutely don't. We were doing things in 2004 that we probably shouldn't have been doing. We had a wife who was pregnant with twins. She ended up in the hospital. She also had a toddler. And her family could not help her, and his family would not help her. And two of the KVs for that company were caring for that kid so that kid would not go into social services. Yeah. They didn't cover that one in the KV
training. Did they cover... Wow. So you go to KV training, and now the march up happens. And now, where were you? Were you at 1st LAR at the time?
Will took over 1st LAR in June of 2003, so they just come back from Iraq.
Okay.
And Will, when we found out he had command, he's like, you know what, honey, don't worry about it. 1st LAR does not deploy as a battalion.
Yeah. No, we field stuff for the Muse, and you know, we do some other stuff. And so Will relieves Duffy White.
Yep.
And so where were you guys during the march up?
We were in D.C. in Virginia.
Okay.
And Will was begging to go. Send me. I speak Arabic. Come on. So they finally let him go. So he's there for, I don't know, I think he left April of 2003 and then came back with them in June.
Right. I remember now. Okay, yeah, so because he was a language speaker and he got there. And so then you guys come out to 1st LAR in the spring of 2000, towards the beginning of the summer of 2003. And then so what was, tell me about how the key wives, the key volunteers were configured when you got to the battalion.
So there was... I don't believe there was an advisor at that time, and the advisor is traditionally the CO's wife. And then you have two volunteers who are battalion coordinators, and they pretty much run the show.
Okay. But they're wives as well, right?
They're all spouses.
Okay.
We had no parents as he volunteers.
Okay, is there a difference between a spouse and a wife? Like, if I say wife, is that bad?
Well,
because you just said spouse.
Right, I'm sort of conditioned into it now, because there are male spouses. There are, you know, there are guys whose wives are active duty Marines. Not a lot, but there are some.
Okay. Well, not where I live. Because in the grunts, this was back in the day. Now you could have male spouses, but we tended not to have those things, so it was all females. Okay, I got a spouse is a better term.
It covers more people.
You're right.
It does cover more people. I mean,
okay.
Will's S3 was married to an active duty Marine, and she, you know, volunteered and did her deployment in Iraq after he got back.
Wow.
That's
cool. All right, so it's essentially a triumvirate of people, and now because of the email and the internet, you can manage information a little bit, and so was everybody good with that? Had that worked well during the march up, or had problems been identified that you guys were working on when you got there? Tell me about that, and then what role did you assume?
I ended up being the advisor, and I was blessed beyond belief to have really good people who were there for all the right reasons. They were there because they wanted to be a part of it. They were invested. They had skin in the game. Unfortunately, volunteer organizations tend to attract a couple of different personalities. First type is, hey, I'm here because I want to be here. There's another personality type that are better suited to run small countries in South America.
Oh,
so,
that's not a good one.
No, Hugo Chavez with boobies is not attractive. So when I got there, apparently we had a Hugo Chavez as the coordinator. And thankfully, her husband was deemed not deployable. So the two who stepped up are still friends of mine to this day. They were just great, and they just put their whole heart into it, and that was their husband's second deployment to Iraq. And they stayed on for the third when Rob Casa took them to Iraq in 2005. So by the time they were done, they were so completely burnt out, and they knew it. So I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, sometimes the KV system doesn't work as well as it ought to, or didn't work as well as it ought to. Burnout.
And there's no way that you can. All right, let's talk about the burnout. So now we have the system, and key volunteers, they get some training. Who provides the training? Where does the class come from?
MCCS does this under the auspices of Family Team Building.
Okay. So they do the training. So everybody has fundamental communication or training on privacy. What else do they train you on? Burnout? What else?
Well, they try to make you recognize when you're getting stressed out or when you're getting burnt out. But the problem also was, with more spouses having their own job, some people didn't think that they had the time. Some people knew they didn't have the time. And some people just didn't want to do it.
Okay. And even though they were in that position?
Right.
Okay. All right. That's not gonna work very well when we deploy it. Okay, so that's kind of the situation that we're in as you guys deploy in the spring of 2004.
Right.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about that. So we have this key volunteer system, and Al Anbar essentially blows up, and casualties begin to come home. Talk to me about that experience.
So April 9th, 2004, I get a phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they tell me that there's been, a Marine killed, and they tell me that his wife has been notified, and I stopped listening after they told me we'd had a Marine killed. They stop talking, I say goodbye, sit on the edge of the bed. What the hell just happened? I call him back, say, could you just repeat what you told me? And he did. I'm sure he had a big red question mark over his head. This woman's mess.
Right.
So when he gets done, I think, you know, I know I'm supposed to do something, but I don't know what it is. Right. I don't know either, ma'am. Okay. Great. The nice thing about married spouses is that we'll network with each other. You know, I mean, Susan did it, I'm sure. I called the spouses of Will's old COs. What am I supposed to do? I don't know. I called another one. Her response wasn't any more helpful, but it was honest. She said, you know, the old book got thrown out the window. You girls are writing the new book. Great. So, the first, you know, that was actually kind of a blur in terms of the Key Volunteer Network. It's just, we had one casualty on the march up. I wasn't there for that. We weren't really sure what we should do for her at all. And the fro, being the fro, decided he was going to protect her, and he told everybody that she didn't want anybody to call. Well, no, that's not.
Okay, hold on. We had a fro at this time?
We did. I'm sorry. We had the fro.
Okay.
He wasn't really selected for his personality, although he was a great guy. I mean, he was my friend.
Okay.
He had a sick wife, very sick wife. And, but we were all sort of fumbling at that point, you know.
Right.
No,
you're in uncharted waters, right? We've never done this before, honestly, as an institution. We've never done this. And so
yeah.
you guys are in fact going to write it. And, so what did you, he says that she just leave her alone?
Yes. And then, you know, she contacted one of our key volunteers, and she, you know, was like, why isn't anybody calling me? And that key volunteer blew up, so there was a fire that had to be put out.
Right.
And so we had a bunch of remain behind who actually went to the funeral in Kentucky. And I knew when they were coming back, and I waited until I knew they were all gone, the funeral was over. They had apparently had a hellacious party on his mom's farm, which is what he wanted.
Right.
So now all of that's gone and everything is quiet, and that was, I kind of knew that was when it was best to call, and I called her, and, you know, we talked for a little bit, and we are still friends. You know, she became part of my family that day. You know, she's come and stayed with us. We keep up with any Gold Star family that wants to be kept in touch. We will do that because they are part of our family.
Right. So when you spoke to her, what did she say about the way that it had been handled and you guys keeping your distance? Was that a good thing, a bad thing?
It was a bad thing. She felt very unsupported. And I apologized to her for that, and I explained it was well-intentioned on his part. He wasn't doing it to be mean to her. He just felt like he needed to protect her. And she understood at that point. She did. We cried.
At that point.
Just,
but it had to feel awful from your position to hear that, you know, here you don't know what to do. You take somebody's advice, and then you find that you wind up hearing from, you know, the person on the other end that, yeah, I felt so alone and unsupported. My God.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely what we don't want to happen.
Right.
Don't want that.
Right. So then what happened? So how does life change on the tail end of that news?
I think we all started getting very, very anxious. You know, that was around the time of the first Battle of Fallujah.
Right.
So my idiot son was all excited because his dad's going to get Fallujah. I'm like, oh, dear God. Ugh. A lot of anxiety. And, you know, the neighborhood that I lived in at Camp Pendleton, I think out of San Onofre must have had about 80 houses, San Onofre 1. I think there were 4 dads home in that entire neighborhood. Everybody said something was wrong.
Right.
So everybody, you know, it was just very anxious. And that was right around the time that 2-4 lost all those guys in Ramadi.
Right. What was that like? I mean, living in a neighborhood like that. I told a story earlier today about, do you know Jeff Hooks? He was with the division at that time, but he's a logistician guy. But he, I think 2MEF was planning a conference, and he had to return relative to their rotation after the 1st Marine Division rotation in 2004. 2MEF was going to 2005, so he was a divisions rep at the conference here in Kona. So he leaves us in Ramadi, and he comes back here, and he goes to the conference, and then he's able to come home for a few days. It might have been in conjunction with his leave, but he didn't tell his wife he was coming. So he gets brought home. Buddy picks him up at March in a white Gubby. And, yeah. You know, do I need to tell the rest of the story? So he doesn't tell her, and he gets out of the vehicle. She's in the house. The vehicle's in front of the driveway. He goes around back to get his stuff out. She doesn't see him because he's kind of out of the view of, you know, the way you would look out the door. And so she looks out the garage. She sees the white vehicle. And he's coming up the driveway out of her view, and they kind of meet in the garage. And he says, surprise. He said she slaps him across the face and says, get that goddamn thing out of here right now. And he says, what? She says, you know, you're an idiot. And she said, come here. And they walk in the driveway. She said, look. And there's, you know, heads poked out of doors up and down the street. Let's see, how would I explain it? Would be indicative of your response when I said white Gubby. Like, what is that car doing here? Where is it going? You know, please don't let it stop in front of my house.
Right. It was, tension. There's an awful lot of tension, and not knowing, feeling like other shoes were always going to be dropping. And right. We never had a notification in our neighborhood. There was one in San Onofre, too. And that guy had kids, and those kids went to the little elementary middle school up at the top of the hill.
Right.
And everybody knew, you know. Once you see that white Gubby and you see the guys come out in the specific uniforms, you know.
Right.
Everybody knows.
My guest this morning, Carrie Costantini, we're talking about what it's like to be a key wife and to deal with the back end of what goes on when Marines go forward, and talking about how that haul all worked, the stress that goes with it. Carrie, we've got to take about a 2 or 3 minute break, and then we'll come back and continue the discussion. You okay with that?
Sure.
All right. Carrie Costantini, an Air Force brat. And still currently married to William Costantini. The toga thing, I just got an email about it. Mac, tell me Vito wasn't wearing the shortest toga at the party. Like, hey, it's a statement of fact. I'm sorry. I wish I could say it. God help us all. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior. Exactly. Good God. What is the world coming to on the All Warrior Radio Network?
I'm good. But I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good. But I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
Life in the military is one of service and sacrifice. For some, that sacrifice includes physical and mental injuries or trauma that will affect their lives forever. Please join with the American Legion in recognizing and supporting our wounded warriors and their families. We need to show them that we truly are a grateful nation. We cannot allow them to be forgotten and left to fend for themselves. On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Benefits available through Social Security are different than those from the Department of Veterans Affairs and require a separate application. The expedited process is used for military service members who become disabled while on active military service on or after October 1, 2001, regardless of where the disability occurs. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family.
We had a reunion of our unit, and you'd hear these spouses say, "Is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us." And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Warriors should know that resources are available. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
All of us want to make a difference. As veterans, we committed to protect our country. We served and sacrificed for the things that mattered most. Those experiences shaped our lives. Now we're husbands, wives, parents, and friends. And sometimes we forget that the biggest challenge can be asking for support. The Veterans Crisis Line is here for veterans. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. It matters.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Where the sidewalk ends and the road begins, we sit.
We continue on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you, All Marine Radio. 11 minutes after 8 here on the West Coast. 11:11 on the East Coast. Carrie Costantini continues with us. She is the wife of a friend of mine, Will Costantini, retired now, living in Florida. And she grew up in the Air Force, married in the Marine Corps, and has really kind of had a life of becoming an activist, if I can call you that, Carrie, and for veteran causes and certainly for family things. And we're talking about that experience. So, and we're talking about 2004. So, first LAR deploys, and do things get better as the deployment goes on, Carrie, and or do they get worse? And how are you guys coping with the daily stress of, as you just mentioned, a lot of anxiety?
It got worse, to be honest. We lost two more. It seemed to come with regularity, like maybe every 6 weeks we would lose someone. And things would get quiet and be like something's happening. After the first Marine was killed, our fro came up with this thing called condolence watch. And that was where what he didn't want to do was notify a wife.
Well, hold on. What did you call it? Somebody barked in the background that I didn't hear.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right.
I didn't do that. Condolence watch.
Okay, condolence watch. All right.
So he would call someone who was available, and it was me, and say, "I'm going to go notify someone," or "We're going to go notify someone, and we'll let you know after we've notified her." But what he wanted to do was not leave her alone afterwards.
Okay.
So that he would offer, "Do you want a wife to come be with you? Do you want a wife to come over, help you make phone calls, stayed with you, whatever. So that was, so I would know that they were going to go make a notification. And I, you know, it would take hours. It would take hours. And you sit there and you wouldn't know who it was. It could be your friend's husband.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't know. Not that it mattered. Somebody was dead and it was a tragedy. But, nobody ever actually wanted that. But I thought that was it certainly was, not something anybody else was doing that I knew of. And it was great that he thought of that. So we were trying to cope with situations and one thing that we did, we would have a memorial service for the Marines when they were killed. And all the wives would bake, and we would buy juice boxes and waters. And that was sort of a way that we coped with it. We baked. We cooked. We focused outward on these other people, and we're not going to think about what else could happen.
Right.
And deal with it. So, we had an incident in August of 2004 where some jackass called home after one of those incidents and told his significant other the whole thing before 5 hours before notification. 5 hours. And one key volunteer who got fired for it was calling people and telling them, as usual, I know more than you. I wanted that woman's head on a pike.
So did the spouse find out from this series of phone calls that her husband had been killed or
no? Thankfully, she was at work. So, and she lived on base. So they were there with the white Gabby waiting for her. She did not know, but the women that she was calling were from the same company, so they didn't know. They didn't know if it was their husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that was all based on, we would go into River City when that stuff happened. So somehow or other, he was able to communicate home before that happened. And
Wow.
Yeah, that's your basic nightmare. And the reason why that stuff happened immediately, as we got sadly more experienced at it. So that's August of 2004. You said things got worse. But they don't come home until, I mean, hell, it was September, October? No.
They came home October.
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 Right. And so
we didn't lose any more
after
Marines.
That.
Right. We didn't lose any. So things kind of calmed down in that regard, even though we didn't know we were still, you know,
right,
day to day. But Charlie Company had gone on UDP to Okinawa.
Right.
And they got picked up by, I don't remember which new, I think 33rd,
mm-hmm,
and dropped into Fallujah with no return date for the second battle of Fallujah.
Right.
And so, you know, Veterans Day, we lost two more. But by that time, Will was home, and he was able to manage things from here or from there. And so Charlie Company's KV network was, you know, having a really hard time because, number one, they weren't expecting this.
Right.
They had no return date. That would be all the unknown. And they were, you know, freaking out. I would have.
Yeah. Right. Hello. So do they, how do you deal with that?
I mean,
and how much did it help? Did it help to have the battalion back, and you know, the battalion commanders there? Did I mean, I would hope that would help.
I think
some.
It helped some,
right?
You know, the nicest thing would have, you know, had them come home, but
right,
that wasn't happening,
right?
But they, you know, you form your network, your tribe, and you support each other, and you get through it. I think they had weekly wife movie night, and they stuck together.
Just the coping mechanisms that they get created because of the shared misery that we're all going through.
Exactly.
Carrie Constantini, our guest here on on All Marine Radio on a Tuesday. We're talking families and what happened in family readiness programs throughout the Marine Corps as we kind of moved in from an area where it was more of a social thing and an information thing to it becoming a casualty support event.
Yeah.
Carrie, how do things change? What did you guys do differently when the battalion got ready to deploy again in 2005?
Well, the two battalion coordinators who were mine stayed on for Michelle. And I think that was, like, they knew the ropes, and they by that point, they're like, okay, we bought the T-shirt on this one.
Okay.
Just more of the same. Just more of the same, you know, support, helping checking on each other, how you doing, cocktail parties.
Now we go from tea to cocktails quite naturally because there's too much stress. So at what point does burnout begin to become an issue? Because certainly, as I said, you know, in no joking matter, guys that won't hesitate to go get shot at run from the whole business of being a casualty assistance case officer. They want no part of it because it's too difficult to watch that kind of pain, and it's easier to get shot at and then go find whoever did this and kill them, and would certainly rather do that and have no problems with it. And those guys run from, you know, what you've been saddled with. So when does the burnout thing, you know, and do you notice it, and how does that impact people?
I think in talking to one of the coordinators, I think she noticed that she was burnt out when everybody else was getting all excited and upset, and she was like, okay, she just wasn't. It wasn't that she didn't care, it was that it just wasn't going to bother her.
And then at that point, that's when you need to change? And did you have other people that wanted to become a part of it? And so how does that impact the organization when the key people that have so much experience say, you know what, I don't think I should be doing this anymore?
You know, that's really hard for me to speak to because this was when Michelle was the battalion advisor.
Okay.
But they got through it. They got through it. And that's the most important thing.
Right. So how does your involvement change? Your son deployed. What year did your son deploy?
Okay, so he deployed. He deployed to Iraq in pretty much the same area his father was in.
Nice.
You know, 4 years later, and for some reason, somebody decided that I should be the advisor for my son's reserve company.
Okay, so you're located in Virginia, Northern Virginia at the time, and his company is the company out of Quantico?
Yeah, Delta Fourth LAR.
Delta Company Fourth LAR. And you're gonna, and they're gonna deploy as a company or the battalion?
They're gonna deploy as a company attached to Second.
Okay. All right. And so you're gonna be the key volunteer.
I'm going to be the key volunteer advisor.
Okay.
They had a great key volunteer coordinator who was also a reservist Marine working in casualty branch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Sadly, right? I mean, a lot of good skills that they could bring to help people. I mean, if it's all done right. So they go, now is the family readiness officer, is that now a fact of life in the Marine Corps?
I believe so. We didn't have, it was, honestly, my son was complaining the entire time about how boring it was, and I would just tell him to shut up.
Yeah, boredom's not a bad thing.
Yeah, really, right? They had one injury because some yahoo jumped off the LAV and broke his ankle.
Okay.
That was the extent
right
of it.
With that. Boys will be boys, we know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, So it was quiet. They didn't need me for much of anything except the pre-deployment brief was so terrible that I had to say something about it. hey, don't ask me to be the advisor if you don't want my advice. It didn't cover what they were going to do in Iraq. It covered nothing about casualty notifications and how that process works. And these are things that families need to know so that they don't see something on the news and get completely, you know, whacked out.
Right.
Hey, if you didn't get a knock at the door, it's not your kid.
Yeah. And you're,
or it's not your husband.
And you're seeing it on the news, you're okay.
Exactly. If you see it on the news and you didn't get some kind of notification, a phone call or a knock, it's not your son.
Yeah. The news the news is a good thing. The news is your friend.
Sometimes.
Carrie Constantini, my guest here, and so you do it again, and now the Marine Corps has got the family readiness. So what was the genesis of the family readiness officer, that program? Was it simply trying to assure some baseline of quality across the Marine Corps relative to family readiness? Is that what it, because again, this journey is, you know, a lot of that family readiness stuff back in the day was the battalion commander's wife
right.
getting involved and, you know, having socials. And then if she was too uppity, the enlisted wife saying, we don't want to go because she's not nice to us and she's an officer's wife and all of that. That was really that was the controversy. Then we go to war and we have a key volunteer system. The family readiness officer not there yet. And I would imagine there probably throughout the Marine Corps was probably nightmare scenarios where either you had the wrong people or no people and a lot of things didn't get done. And, again, we're taking a lot of casualties, both, killed and wounded, and some of the casualties, if they're burns or amputations, I mean, that's a long road for a family in terms of, hey, my kids are in, my family's in Pendleton, he's at Brooks in San Antonio, or he's going to stay at Bethesda, she wants to go back there and be with them, the kids can't leave school. So they weren't easy problems by any stretch of the imagination. And so the FRO is an attempt, you know, on the Marine Corps part to institutionally address some baseline for families. Is that how that happens?
So if the KV network was a good one,
right?
No drama.
No
but
drama.
Not all the KV networks were created equal. Right. So yes, they were trying to have an adult in charge who, you know, could handle the things and was not part of the battalion hierarchy, as
right.
it were.
Right.
So the problem is that the units who did not place the priority on family readiness would just pick a warm body as their contract from. So
you don't sound like you don't sound like you're a fan of that.
It's mixed. I think it has mixed results.
Okay. So bottom line is you're going to live with what you hire, and if you don't put a lot of time into it and find a good person, and you take whoever walks through the door, then you get whatever walks through the door, which, you know, oftentimes isn't probably what the optimum candidate.
Right. Exactly. If you don't place a priority on it. It's going to bite you in the ass at some point.
Who hires that person, the battalion commander?
I believe, so in my son's case, I believe it was the INI guy
right.
and the reserve CO.
Okay, they got together and did the hiring.
I believe so, yeah.
But on active duty, it would be the battalion commander, I would assume?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So your son deploys that time, and he deploys one other time, or is that the only time he deployed?
Oh, no, he went to Afghanistan, like, not even a year later.
Okay.
I don't think it was only a year.
Did you remain as the key, or one of the key volunteers in his unit?
No, they had done away with that program by then.
Okay. And so now it's just froze.
Now it's just this, you know, contract froze. And then you could hire a Marine wife to come in and do it, but you know, not everybody wants to do that.
Right.
You know,
okay, so
it's who shows up.
All right. So talk to me about how this experience affected you and then your continued involvement with things related to veterans and families.
Okay. Because it feels like the majority of the population isn't even aware that we were at war, you know, more concerned with the Kardashians, it kind of felt like. But military spouses would step up to the plate, military parents would step up to the plate, and that's actually how Semper Fi Fund came to be. A lot of wounded coming back. The government can only do so much. You know, they can't do everything. And so Karen Gunther and a bunch of ladies at Camp Pendleton founded this organization that supports those wounded and their caregivers in a variety of ways, through financial grants and moral support. Every one of the volunteers at Semper Fi Fund is a Marine wife, if not also a Marine mother. So we speak the same language and we understand the same concerns.
So you're part of the tribe.
Exactly.
I love that.
Exactly.
I love that. So, and that started with Karen Gunther here at the at Camp Pendleton.
She was a nurse down at Balboa, and she was noticing things that were needed and couldn't be provided by the government, like a van with a wheelchair lift, or a specific kind of hospital bed, or, you know, somebody's mom was taking unpaid leave and her mortgage wasn't going to get paid, or she wasn't going to have money for groceries, or she had to pay somebody to watch her other children while she was there at Best Buy. So Semper Fi Fund would do anything to support a caregiver's ability to be there and support anything that would help, you know, the wounded find their new normal, really.
You know, Carrie, some of the stories that, you know, that you heard coming out, you know, of, you know, okay, somebody's an amputee or, you know, just the things, the stories about, you know, sometimes, you know, guys would get married and they didn't switch their life insurance from their, you know, from their mom to their spouse. And now they have kid, you know, they have a kid and the spouse essentially is told, hey, you've got to leave. And, you know, and she's got zero and she's not on good terms with the mother. And you're just like, oh, make it stop, please. And into those terrible situation, you know, organizations like the Semper Fi Fund step and help solve those awful, awful problems and, you know, at least provide a way where there was thought to be none. And so, so now how did you, did you know Karen Gunther and how did you get involved in the Semper Fi Fund?
I did not know Karen Gunther and I was, this was May of 2004, so we were heavily into that deployment. I was invited to come down and help organize that, and I said no for a couple of reasons. One, I was just busy and overwhelmed as it was, and two, I looked at the other end of the base, and I'm not, no, too far for me. But in 2006, a mutual friend of ours got blown up in Iraq, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
I do.
Okay. So after he was wounded, I called Wendy Levine and I said, I want to start volunteering with the fund. And she's like, been waiting for you. Yeah. So I started and, you know, all the people that I met, doing that work, they were amazing. They're just amazing, strong, strong people. I had one mom who stayed at Walter Reed for a year. And the only time she left was when her mother died and she went to her funeral. That was it.
Oh. Now, the stories that come out of this, in turn, a couple things blow your way. One is the devotion that, you know, people have to each other and what they'll go through and how tough people tend to be. The other one is that blows your way is the compassion and the lengths other people go to help those people. And I mean, you know, a lot of times I talk about my job here in terms of, you know, talking about these things. And I said, you know, my job is good on top of good on top of good on top of good on top of good. in terms of telling the story of the culture of the Marine Corps. And, you know, the Semper Fi Fund is one of those organizations that, you know, and I think we all know as you go through life, you never appreciate help as much as when you truly need it. You know, and it's hard to even put into words, when you don't know either how you're going to pay your bills, you don't know how you're going to stay in your house, you don't know how you're going to move him around now that he's a double amputee because you're not big enough to help him, you know. So how did she get in the car? You know, how do we do this? And then somebody shows up to help. I don't care. You never, ever, ever get over that feeling of relief in terms of you didn't have a solution and somebody steps in. I guess it wasn't hard to stay involved with the Semper Fi Fund.
No, it wasn't hard at all. It was awesome. I'm so grateful to have had that experience through the fund, just knowing that I could do something for them. I could help them, you know. I could help a dad who lived in Washington State kennel his two golden retrievers so he could take his turn with his son at Bethesda, you know?
Right. And those are the kind of things, you know, that, you know, we talk about, you know, this happening or that happening. And, yet there's all these other issues that happen that impact people financially. And, so in the process of going and trying to help my son, and taking, you know, my turn because I desperately want to do that, I wind up financially impacting myself and then I can't, you know, I can't do it, or, you know, and then I'm put into that situation. So, you know, just the gut-wrenching decisions that go on with this constant care that guys need when they're injured, whether it be traumatic right. brain injury, whether it be becoming an amputee, and how your life changes forever, you know, into that the Semper Fi Fund gets. Now, how did you become like I almost wanted to use the word dominatrix of the internet, but how did you get to be this internet person relative to veteran Marine issues?
Because
you cast a long shadow across the internet. I want you to know how did that happen?
When the war started and I didn't find the news covering it as well as I wanted it to.
Right.
I went to the mill bloggers and became friends with all of these mill bloggers. And so they would, we would share resources. We would, if we saw, you know, an effort to hire veterans or this or that, we could share it with each other and publicize it. And, you know, again, it was one of those things where we felt like maybe a lot of the country wasn't even aware of what was going on.
And so that's how you start, just by getting information from bloggers and meeting different people online.
Yes.
And so that turns into what?
Well, because I'd done some fundraising for, like, some, you know, Christmas things for deployed troops, a friend of mine who was also a Marine wife, but not overly involved in that, works at Leesylvania State Park. Have you ever been there?
At what park?
Leesylvania State Park.
No. Leesylvania. L-E-S-Y-V something, something, something.
Right. It was just down the road from Quantico.
Okay. No, I've never been there.
So she works there, and it's one of the most beautiful places you'd ever want to go to. And she was watching what was happening at Walter Reed with the horrible living conditions. And she thought, well,
horrible living conditions for families?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the rooms that the guys were staying in, they were, you know, maybe the plumbing didn't work or there were horrible mold issues.
It was
maybe 2008 when that started coming out. And, you know, it was bad. It looked terrible. And Walter Reed was a tired hospital to begin with before the war, and it just got more tired afterwards. But she wanted to do something about that. And she thought, well, you know, I could bring them here and they could get off the ground with Walter Reed and Bethesda and do something normal. So she called me and she said, I need help. said, okay. We went to lunch, and she told me what she wanted to do, and I pitched it to all these mill bloggers, and they were asked, I mean, anything I ever asked them to do, they did. They loved this, and we probably did 8 or 9 fishing events. They had built a handicapped fishing pier, and we would work with Walter Reed and Bethesda about transportation because they had the buses with the wheelchair lift.
Right.
And they would bring these guys down and their families, and we would, you know, we would spoil them all day. We'd feed them. We had games for the kids. There was gorgeous hiking. We had this group of fishermen who fished off that pier who also, I think, mostly were veterans. They'd bring all the poles. They'd bring all the bait, and they'd sit there all day long and help those guys fish.
I've got an email for you. Mac, I'm a member of the Boys of 3-5, and we know Carrie, and I just want to thank her today for everything she's done for us to help facilitate our staying in touch with each other and even our most recent reunion. So God bless her. Tell her, please tell her thank you very much, and we greatly appreciate everything she's done. So
that's sweet.
So the you start touching wires via the internet and bloggers and things like that, and people start happening. How do you get involved in the Boys of 3-5? Because you're not a 3-5, you're not a 3-5 girl.
Nope, not at all, not at all. But I am, you know, I am a Marine wife. I am a Marine mom.
Right.
And the founder of the page was trying to take his efforts in a different direction after the boys came home from Sangin. And he couldn't keep the page up the way he wanted to. Plus, he was always stealing my stuff anyway. He says, why don't you just come over?
So he's ripping your stuff off.
He's ripping my stuff off. I didn't care. It wasn't my stuff. But he'd see my links, and he'd put them on the page. And he's like, why don't we just cut out the middleman here and you just come over and start doing it?
Coach Soto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coach Soto. Mark.
Ripping Carrie off. All right, so he's ripping you off, and and so you guys, so he says, why don't you just come and unscrew my stuff, and then and we'll call it good?
Yeah, yeah. He did have a couple of rules for me, and if he's listening, Mark, you're not following your own rules. But
what are the rules? Well, let me tell you how I connect with Carrie here. I don't know, probably 2 months ago now. I had seen the video of that corporal.
Josue.
Yeah. Josue going to the top of First Sergeant's Hill on the Sunday of the 3-5 reunion that they had here recently. So I see that, and then I see who posted it. And so now I'm looking for that guy to come on the radio. So I find their Facebook page, and I send them a message. Hey, I'm Mike McNamara, blah, 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 blah. And then I get back this. Mike McNamara, who was in Quantico and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, uh-oh, somebody knows me? Yeah. And, hey, this is Carrie Costantini. I'm like, what the hell are you doing here? And so I'm like, God, she's controlling the internet now. What is she, like, monitoring for Zuckerberg or something like that? And close. And so it's kind of – so has your advocacy changed in terms of what you're now involved with, Carrie? Because, you know, you kind of – you start out as a wife and then do it again as a mom, and you've been involved in the Semper Fi Fund and now touching wires on the internet and making things happen. How has your advocacy changed? What are you involved – what do you stay involved in now?
I'm involved in, I'd say, a pretty good number of Facebook groups that, you know, network and support. I'm on a First LAR page, and, you know, if I see opportunities for jobs, I'll post them.
Mm-hmm.
If I see that there's a need for something and I know that there's an organization that does that, I'll connect them. If I know the person at that organization, I'll connect them personally. But nothing formalized, just, you know, based on needs.
So you're just like rolling around being an angel shark looking for targets of opportunity and helping out.
Well, you know, I mean, some of these guys don't, they don't know where to start looking, and I kind of do. I used to have a really good mental Rolodex of organizations, and there, I mean, there were, the last time I even bothered to check this, there have been like 5,000 military support and wounded support organizations, you know, in existence.
5,000?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. I don't think they all exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we've drawn down in both Iraq and Afghanistan, the need has not been there as it was, you know, like 2006, 2008. It may become a need again. I don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
So the good, like, Hope for the Warriors is another really good one. They do a lot for caregivers, support, resources, online support. Tunnels to Towers is another really good one. They provide the adaptive home for, you know, catastrophically wounded guys. I mean, they do that. The house is amazing technology-wise, and, you know, you can run your house from your iPad,
right,
when they're done with it.
Right. What, I've got another email for you, Mac. Pretty interesting this morning, listening to Carrie speak. I'm a newer Marine wife, and, I had a friend who told me that I should listen this morning. What is Carrie's advice to us? We didn't go through the war. Our husbands have joined after, yet we're going through this stuff the first time as they deploy around the world. Does she have any advice for us? Thank you. Carrie?
Oh. Gosh. I would suggest first you build your tribe, because gone is gone and a deployment is a deployment. If you have children, you're still doing it alone.
Right.
You know? Have some goals while they're gone. Don't sit home and be unhappy. Get out there. Take a class. Learn a sport. You know?
And that's just mental health advice, right?
Right. Right.
Right. Don't sit home, you know, watching the clock, because it only makes it take longer. All right.
Exactly.
So stay busy. What other advice?
Gosh. I'm stumped.
Okay. No, it's okay. That's stay busy. How about information? Is more information better? Or if there are people that are information people, you know, just, you know, if that's what you are, then go ahead and look for it. Or do you have any advice relative to that? Is less better?
It depends. If you're going to sit and watch the news all day long, you really are going to make yourself unhappy. Don't do it. Make sure that your husband's command, you know, knows your correct information, contact information.
Right.
Make sure that, you know, you have a buddy or two in that battalion, especially if you're going to go home and your husband's deploying. Make sure you have a friend or two who can, you know, email you, go, by the way, this, you know, this is going on, or we heard this today. Just keep connected, but don't obsess about it.
Okay. All right. Keep connected. Don't obsess. How about advice for women that have kids at home and that are doing this for the first time? And the kids are old enough to kind of, you know, they're school age. So one of the things that you can do when your kids are school age is you can feed them and take care of them. One of the things you can't do is you can't protect them from everything that everybody else says. And sometimes your kids come home with things that you would rather they not have heard. Any advice relative to kids?
It would have to be based on the child and what the child is able to handle, I guess. Now, my kids were much older. They were in high school.
Right.
They went to school out in town. So they went to San Clemente High School. And there were only about 35 of them, and they kind of stuck together. And, you know, they had their own little support group that if you're if you think your child is old enough to handle, you know, okay, daddy's gonna go here and he's gonna be gone in this many months, and you have to decide how much you're gonna tell your kids.
Right. Talk to me about the concept of age-appropriate answers. And I'll give you an example. I was packing to leave to go to Afghanistan in 2010, and Colleen, I want to say, was 5 or 6, and she's playing in the other room, and I was, you know, putting my uniforms on the bed and stuff like that, and she walks in and she says, "Are you going to go to the war?" And I said, "Yep." She said, "Okay," and then she leaves. And then 5 minutes later, she comes back. She says, "Are you going to kill people?" I said, "Only people that need to be killed, only bad guys." I said, "Is that okay?" She said, "Yes." So she leaves. 5 minutes later, she comes back in. She says, "Are you going to get killed?"
Christ.
Yeah, I said, "Have I got killed the other 2 times? She said, "No." I said, "Then I'm not getting killed this time." Okay. She goes out and she plays. So, and then one of my other kids asked me, they said, like, "Is that like, okay? Is that okay?" I said, "Do you want me to tell you the truth that I don't know, that maybe?" And I said, "Is that something I should leave my daughter with?" I said, "She's a little girl. She doesn't know." I said, "I don't want to certainly make it worse." I said, "So, I mean, do you want to ask me the same questions? It'll be a little bit different conversation." I said, "But I think the truth is scalable. You don't want to burden your children with it if you don't need to." And
yeah.
So is the truth scalable, and should you be careful with your kids? And if they kind of start sniffing down that road, then maybe you have that conversation, but you don't necessarily introduce it before it's time.
Right. I think what you did with your daughter was absolutely perfect. You answered her questions. You didn't give her all kinds of information. You specifically answered her question. It's kind of like when little kids ask about sex. Answer the question, but don't give them lots of details.
Until they start asking for details, and then give them a couple, and that'll stop the whole thing right there.
Yeah.
That's my experience, okay? It's a, "Stop it, please!" "No, you want to go there with me?" "No, I'm sorry. Okay, don't do that, girlfriend. Terry Constantini, my guest here, we're talking advice and lessons learned. All right, Terry, one more email, and then I'll let you go. Mac, I just tuned in. I apologize for being late. I'll catch up on the podcast. Love that you're on iTunes now. You're welcome. Could Carrie go over a few websites for those of us who have friends that have wounded husbands? I am still on active duty, and so I am still in touch with friends who need help on occasion and would love to be able to steer them to good places. So, Carrie, you mentioned a few websites, so can you just go over those one more time?
Sure. One of them is Hope for the Warriors, and they have an online Facebook group for caregivers. My friend Colleen Saffron, who is a lovely, lovely woman, is a caregiver herself. She was the Army Spouse of the Year in 2008. Her husband has traumatic brain injury and some other issues, and she mentors a lot because she is my resource guru. So basically, what I can do is email you I will get them from her.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And give them to you, and maybe you can put them on your website or on the page.
No,
I mean,
will.
She is.
Get control of that house. What I'll do, Carrie, is I'll put it on, we have a page called Show Notes. So I'll just put a note up there that says Carrie Constantini's awesome websites for I don't know, I'll figure it out. But I'll put whatever you send me.
Okay.
And that'll include the Semper Fi Fund, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I will give you a complete list as I go through my rusty mental Rolodex.
Oh, there you go. What about another email? Mac, is there a go-to place if you're now off active duty, your husband is dealing with the VA, he's an amputee, the VA's not the easiest organization to deal with. Does Kerry have a recommendation in terms of if you do need financial assistance, where we can go on occasion when life kind of rolls on top of us and we're trying to cope? Is there a,
okay,
is there a place that does money?
There's an organization called USA Cares, and if you need a grant for something like making your rent or making your mortgage, that's what they do. So I will add that to the list.
All right. All right. Kerry, is there anything that I haven't been smart enough to ask you about? I mean, what frames this issue for me is guys want no part of this, the whole casualty assistance process. And when they do talk about, when we sit down and talk about this kind of stuff, they're the first stories that get told in terms of, wow, I was back for when this happened and it was horrible. I would never want to do it again. Yet you guys are the ones that kind of dealt with that side of the war and those, I won't call them messes, but in those situations that occurred on a regular basis. So that story is a rough one. And for a lot of families, it's not going away anytime soon. It's going to be there for years and years and years. And people like you stay involved and make a difference in people's lives. So, first of all, thanks for coming on this morning and doing this, and good on you for all the different people you've helped over the course of all these years that have certainly needed your help. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Matt. I enjoyed it.
All right. And you don't mind if I give you a call again sometime and we come back on when these issues come up?
It depends upon how mad my husband is when he gets home and finds out I told the circus story.
tell him, look. Did you put a gun to his head and say, hey, I think you should wear a really short toga? No.
I hadn't even met him yet.
Exactly. So is that your fault or his fault? Okay, let's not run from the public record. Let's just stand up, take it like a man, and then we can move on. Anyway. All right, Kerry, thank you very much for the visit, and you'll shoot me those links, and I'll put them on the website.
Yes, I will.
You bet. Awesome.
Thank you.
No, thank you. And again, we didn't do the stuff you guys did. I know you represent a lot of women today that dealt with a lot of different things. And that was rough stuff. And so again, thanks for coming on and talking about it. We certainly appreciate everything you've done. So thank you.
Thank you. All right.
You bet. All right, Kerry Constantini here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Now, you know, I kid you not. That stuff was no bullshit. It was, and I'll tell you, I mean, and it's kind of a timeless thing in the Marine Corps where, and I'll take it back to the Flags of Iwo Jima book. Those guys come back and they're doing on their war tour. If you read the book, and the story that gets told when they meet the parents, the mothers specifically, of the guys who were in their squad that put that flag up, and I believe it's Strank's mother, it's Harlan Block's mother, and I think Hank Hansen's mother are the guys that were killed. They meet them, I want to say in Philadelphia, and it's this very emotional scene where, you know, we don't deal with that, you know, and that's brutal. So it's a story that's part of our culture, and it goes on today. People continue to help. The Semper Fi Fund, awesome, awesome people. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Scott Cuomo is going to join us. We're going to talk about an article that he's written for the Marine Corps Gazette, and the article is entitled the in fact it's the Marine Corps Gazette Hour we're going to do, but the article is entitled Manned Unmanned Teaming. So we'll talk to him about that. There's a whole bunch of it going on, and we'll find out if that stuff works in the rain when we talk to him. More of All Marine Radio coming up next here on a Tuesday on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it on a Wednesday if you're just tuning in. Here an interview I did 2 years ago with Carrie Cosentini, who laid her memorial services today. And so again, as always, our thoughts are with a very, very good friend of mine, Will Cosentini, and his family. So all the best to them. Thanks for listening. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. We do about 40 minutes of news headlines. And then if you turn in late to this interview, you can hear it'll play again right after that. So have a great day. On a Wednesday, All Marine Radio, over and out.